This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Michael K. and Don LaGreca with you. Hope you're having a great day, everybody. For those that don't like Peter, these next 2 days will be glorious for you because Peter has gone to the ends of the earth to have some time off. Literally, he's in Montauk, and I'm not giving away secrets because it's all over his Instagram. But Peter will not be with us these 2 days. So I don't know how we'll get going, Don, but we'll do our best for sure.
Oh, we're going to fight through it because that's what we do, and that's what we do well.
We do do that well. If anybody is watching on Yes, and I want to explain something. My hair is growing at an unbelievable rate. And what we did the other day in the K household was we cut my hair as a family. So they all took turns. Callie, Charlie, Jody with the clippers, and some of it's uneven. I still don't feel safe about going to a barber shop, so that's why we did it. And if it looks a little bit chopped up, that's the why, because I think that's the area that the kids got. So I apologize for that right off the bat. Don is not even attempting to cut his hair. Don sent out a, I hope I'm not talking out of school. He sent out a mass text over the weekend where he's holding his son. And now Don has, he's got product in there right now, so it's slicked back. He looks like Pat Riley from the Knicks days. And, but he did not have any product on the picture, and he's holding Marco. And he said, look, Marco with Colonel Sanders. And he looked like Colonel Sanders.
I'm gonna send this to Greek right now. And maybe they can pop it up on Yes.
It was really Colonel Sanders. It looked like Harlan Sanders.
Yeah, because I haven't done anything with the beard. You can see if I pull it down, I kind of look like Anton LaVey, the Satan guy. And then, you know, if I can't really, you can't really see, like it's, look at that. It's long, man. And I'm going to let it grow because I'm like you. I don't know. I don't feel comfortable. So let it grow, man. So what? I'm a radio guy.
But don't you have clippers in the house that, you know, Nancy could buzz you?
No, I'm good. I want to see where this goes.
Wow.
I want to see how this ends up. But that's the picture, because as the day goes on, Michael, the product starts to dissipate a little bit and kind of, you know, the humidity and everything. So that's what you saw in the picture that I sent. So I sent it to Greek. Maybe I'll be able to pop it up on the TV at some point today. But I do look like Colonel Sanders.
Amazing. Amazing.
Or Michael McDonald, one of the two.
I'm going to go with Colonel Sanders because it's funny. The Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. If you didn't tune in at 2:55, the official starting time of the show on the radio, what an awful day in New York sports. I mean, an all-time really terrible, terrible day. The Mets come back from a deficit. Looks like they're going to take 3 out of 4 from the Phillies. They end up blowing it in extra innings. And just a brutal loss for them. So they it looked good for a while, and then they end up splitting with the Phillies so they don't gain any ground on them. Right. The Islanders in the first game of the conference finals lay a complete egg. Both goaltenders didn't have it. And the Yankees, I mean, I've been doing this a long time, Don. A long time, as you know. And this is about as poorly as they've played over a long stretch of time. I mean, I keep looking down in the dugout to see Stump Merrill. I mean, it's been that bad. I mean, what are they, 5-14 in 19 games? I mean, it's hideous.
Well, and I guess this is not the team they had hoped it would be, but it's starting to get closer, Michael, right? I mean, you've got the MVP from last year in the lineup in DJ LeMahieu. Voit has been very good. And you look at the guys that gave up the runs in that 10-run inning, Michael. You're talking about Chad Green and Ottavino. Those are two guys that are supposed to be pieces to your puzzle in the bullpen. I think that's the thing I'm the most disappointed with, Michael. It seems like the script is exactly the same every day. Mm-hmm. Yankees get an early lead, don't score again for the rest of the game pretty much, and then just allow the bullpen to give it back and lose the game, right? I mean, that's how they seem to lose every night.
It's dispiriting, which leads us into the Yankee Pinstripe Report brought to you by Budweiser. I got to tell you, we weren't on yesterday because of Labor Day. Wischusen did a very nice job filling in. But what happened in Baltimore was stunning to me because the Orioles are their get-well card.
Yep.
So they had won 19 straight games against the Orioles. I mean, the major league record for most games on the road, they were one away from setting the major league record, and then they lose 3 out of 4 to the Orioles. Now, the Orioles are a little bit better, but they're not on the class of the Yankees. And the robotic nature of the Yankee organization is starting to get to me, Don. Somebody sent me this quote today, and I think it's so apropos for what's going down. And I'm going to read it. It's from Winston Churchill. And he said, however beautiful the strategy, you should occasionally look at the results. Well, the results aren't good. And as much as we love all the analytics that the Yankees do, they haven't won a World Series since 2009. And if I'm Hal Steinbrenner, the owner of the Yankees, I'm red hot the way they're playing right now. I'm red hot. Now, I'm going to tell you some of the things that bothered me in Baltimore. This is a team that can't hit. And Saturday was the day, come hell or high water, that DJ LeMahieu was going to get a rest. Come on. Really? And then before the game, DJ LeMahieu was asked, did you want a rest? No, I did not. Just because some computer spit out that you had to rest DJ LeMahieu that day, the lineup could not support taking out one of their best hitters. But because it was rest day, he had a rest. Then on Sunday, they could split this four-game set with the Orioles, get out of town without any blood being shed. But because he came back a day early, well, they had to rest Gleyber Torres on Sunday. He couldn't play two games in a row. Come on. Really? This is a 60-game season. Take a look at the Blue Jays, who now lead the Yankees by two games for second place in the East. Their players never take a day off. This is a 60-game season. Load management. Are you kidding me? At some point, the urgency of the situation has to take hold over the analytics. And, Don, I look at it this way. Both of us have said this, but the Yankee organization shouldn't say this. They're acting like they get an automatic bid to the playoffs. Yeah. Well, let me tell you something. It's slipping away. It's not a birthright. They might not get into the playoffs. We're 19 games away from the end of the season, and as strange and as macabre as this sounds, they're checking the scores of the Tigers and the Orioles and the Mariners. Three of the worst teams in baseball are breathing down their neck. So let's take the analytics and put it on the shelf. What do we need to do today to win? No, I don't care if DJ has to rest today. He's not resting today. In fact, he's not resting the rest of the year. And this whole stretch started because they started resting people because it was time to rest them. Here's the thing I would tell the analytics department, and I'm sorry, I believe in the analytics. I think over the long haul they work. Over the short haul, in some instances, it should stop. So all we've heard over the last couple of years, guys have to rest to be at their best. They have to do this. They have to be off this day. They can't play this many games in a row. They get injured more than any team in baseball. So how's it working out?
It's not. And I'll quote somebody else too, Michael, that's pretty famous. Everybody's got a plan until they get hit. Mike Tyson.
And they don't have a plan when they get hit.
Because you're right. Their plan seems to be, well, for the long haul. Hey, we're going to the playoffs, so we want to make sure everybody's well rested when we get into the playoffs. But right now, you said it, Michael, Baltimore is a half game back, or a game back in the loss column. Seattle's two games back in the loss column. Detroit is one game back in the loss column. Now, I don't think those teams are any good, but how good are the Yankees right now? So you have 19 games left this season, and you're going to probably need a lot of them to solidify a playoff spot. Are you prepared for that? Or are you just going to go about your business just assuming that you're going to be able to make the playoffs and giving guys rest on days where you desperately need to win some games? And do you really want, Michael, to clinch things on the last day of the season where maybe Cole's got a pitch instead of saving him for game one of a best-of-three series? You know, all we've been talking about is how dangerous it is for the big bad Yankees who are going to win 45 games of the regular season to have it all come down to a best of three. Well, if you've got a pitch, Colin Tanaka down the stretch to solidify the playoff spot, what are you going to have in this best of three?
And
what are you going to have?
The rest of the season is tough. They play 9 games against the Blue Jays, including tonight. They play 3 games against the Red Sox, who are dreadful, but you think that they might rejoice in knocking the Yankees out of an 8-team playoff? The final 3 games of the season are against the Marlins, who actually might make the playoffs in the National League.
They're in right now.
There's no gimme. There's no gimmies here. So when they started yesterday, they had 20 games remaining. I felt if they get 10, if they win 10 games, they probably get in. But is there any guarantee? Does anybody out there feel any certitude that they're going to win 10 of these 20 games? Well, last night was the first one, and what a loss that was.
Wow.
I mean, you just can't blindly stick to any kind of rule that is followed blindly is blindly stupid. There's got to be room for maneuvering. There's got to be some change-ups along the way. You can't say this is the day that DJ LeMahieu rests. And when he came out and publicly said, I didn't want a day off. Now, the Yankees would probably say, well, you don't know stuff that we know. I'll run DJ LeMahieu out there at 70% before I'd run anybody else out there. Well, 70%. And if Gleyber Torres is good enough to play on Saturday, goodness gracious, you can't tell me he wasn't good enough to play on Sunday in a ballpark where he dominates.
Listen, I understand that the analytics tell you something. I also understand that they probably figured we're going to give DJ LeMahieu a rest here or there. But read the tea leaves. Where are you right now? You can't afford to do it. Just now, you rattle off 5-6 in a row, get comfortably back in the playoffs again. I guess you can have all systems go. But right now, you got to make adjustments. Right now, they are every bit their record, if not worse. Right now, they're a game above 500, Michael. I'm not even sure they're a 500 team. I mean, Michael, they're the San Francisco. Look at the Giants. The Giants are in the playoffs. They have basically the same record the Yankees do. And they're in a full rebuild. A full rebuild. The Marlins are a team that we thought was a joke at the beginning of the season. Man, I win a game. They have the same, basically the same record as the Yankees do.
And again, I don't want to put myself in his shoes. But I can just imagine sitting in his office in Tampa, Hal Steinbrenner must go, what the hell? What's going on? Yeah, I know there are injuries, but why are we this bad? Because the part that's not injured, the bullpen. Why is Chad Green not pitching well?
Right.
Why is Adam Ottavino giving up all those runs in a grand slam? What's going on? What's happening with our pitching? This guy spends a lot of money to put a playoff team out there, and I'm telling you, they're not playing like one now, because yesterday's game, they had a 6-2 lead going into the sixth inning, and boom, then the formula should kick in. Green in the sixth, Ottavino in the seventh, Britton in the eighth, Chapman in the ninth, you win the game. They never even got out of the sixth without the lead.
No.
And a little clue to everybody, they're not good defensively, they're booting a lot of balls, and they keep coming back to bite them. The error yesterday by Luke Voit was gigantic in that inning. And they keep making one of those errors every single game. You know when Aaron Boone said to that rookie umpire, who's going to be the home plate umpire tonight, by the way, we got to tighten this bleep up. They got to tighten this bleep up now. They got 19 games to be. This would be one of the most embarrassing moments in Yankee history if they don't make an 18 playoff with an over $200 million payroll. It would be mind-boggling if that happened. Mind-boggling. Another baseball person called me today, Don, and said something that I never even thought of, and I think it's right on point. The Yankees might be one of the teams that are most affected by no people in the stands. Because Yankee fans hold their players accountable. They cheer them on to great things, and when they're not doing well, they get booed. And they get embarrassed to do better. There's none of that this year. There's nobody holding them accountable other than themselves. There's no fans booing them off the field if they lost a game like they did last night. So the lack of fans, I didn't think it would affect this team because I thought this team was a self-starter. I think it's affecting this team a lot.
Well, if that's truly the case, Michael, then get them all on social media. Get them all to listen to this show because they'll hear it. If they're looking for some motivation by how the fans feel about them, listen to this show. I'm sure they all have access to Yes. I'm sure it's in the clubhouse for them. Watch this show. because you're going to hear it from us and you're going to hear it from the fans. Go to social media. They're getting destroyed on social media, Michael. So if that's an easy fix, a real easy fix, pay attention to what's written and said about them because none of it's positive. And you know what? Every fan wants to hold them accountable. And I've heard a few saying, well, this season doesn't mean anything, but that's bull. Everybody came into this year thinking it was a fait accompli that it was going to be the Yankees and the Dodgers. Both teams were just going to devastate during the regular season. The Dodgers have. They don't lose. Yankees are a 500 team. You're in it to win it. And I think the fans get caught up in it, and they're red hot, Michael. So get on the horn with somebody down the clubhouse, tell them to put on yes. If they're looking for motivation, they'll get it.
And I got to tell you one thing, a big thing on social media, and this has been almost like a thing over the last 8 years, if George were alive, you got to stop that. And you know, he would fire Boone. Why would you fire Boone? Did Boone give up the grand slam to Dan Jansen yesterday? Was that Boone? Did Boone not make the right move there? Now, there have been things that make you scratch your head. You know, why would you bring in Clark Schmidt in the Orioles series in the middle of an inning for his major league debut? That lost the game.
But everything
spills over from one thing to the next. When Montgomery had that two-thirds of an inning outing, they have not recovered from that, Don. Their bullpen is exhausted. They couldn't bring in Luis Sessa in relief of Ottavino yesterday because they didn't have any long man for today. So now without Sessa, and they use Clark Schmidt, everything is interconnected. So Boone is kind of handcuffed. I'm not blaming Boone for this at all.
And I'm sure that the DJ getting a day off in Torres, that's organizational as well, all right, because that's what the analytics tell you. And I would think Boone, Michael, who grew up in a household full of baseball players, his brother was a ball player, dad was a ball player, and that was way before analytics. I'm sure he'd love to be able to actually manage this team at times. But he's under orders, I'm sure, and it's probably difficult for him too. But I will say this. I do think there needs to be a little fire. Remember when he went off of the umpires last year? That kind of turned things around?
Right.
You know, maybe these, because these press conferences to me are just very, and listen, this is why he was hired, but it just seems very soft, very everything's going to be okay, very calming. Maybe this team needs a real kick in the butt, Michael. Maybe they need a Joe Girardi for a day. Maybe they need a little fire. Maybe Boone's got to go out there and get tossed out of a game. Maybe he's got to say something negative about the players in the postgame. Something, because it's not all right. It's not.
If there's one prevailing thread with everybody's complaint, and I got an email from a friend of mine who works in PR in California. He's a huge Yankee fan. I mean, to the point of obsession. He said, on the postgame press conferences, can Boone at least act like he cares as much as I do? And I wrote him back. I said, are you out of your mind? Joe Girardi criticized Gary Sanchez once in a game in Cleveland. That cost him his job. I'm convinced of it. So that's how Boone got the job, because the public face has to be somebody where you're pumping the players up because the players see that. What good does it do other than throw chum to the masses if you criticize your players on the postgame? Now, I hope behind the scenes that they know that he's upset that with the way they're playing, because they're just not performing, but they're being sloppy and they're not playing baseball the right way. That's not a good thing. They are not tight at all.
I don't know, but sometimes, Michael, you got to just kind of break from the norm a little bit.
But that's not the rules of engagement of being hired was not to do that.
Well, that's when if Boone wants to maybe save his job. You don't think he's going to get fired, Michael, but I have a feeling somebody might lose their job based on what happens this year. If this team misses the playoffs, as much as it may seem it's like it's unfair, who's to say the Yankees wouldn't make some sort of a move? And if I'm Aaron Boone and I feel like kicking the team in the butt might work, don't I have to go to my bosses and say, listen, we got to fire this up here. This isn't working anymore. You know, maybe the players just feel like everything's okay. Calm, they got the guy that they want. Nobody's over critical of us. Well, maybe it's time to be critical. I do think there's
time.
But
we don't know. Maybe being critical behind the scenes.
Maybe, but we don't know. But if you're telling me that this is the way that they want them to be, listen, I don't think they were mad at Girardi for going after Sanchez publicly. They were probably mad at Girardi for going after Sanchez, period. So I think it's possible that they just want a kind and gentler manager to kind of let the players feel comfortable. Well, if this is what feels comfortable, then something's going to have to happen here.
And they're so locked in to doing everything that the computer spits out. So the entire spring training and then summer camp was spent reprogramming Gary Sanchez into a catcher that can frame pitches that are low in the zone? Well, first of all, it has affected him with pass balls and wild pitches. And he can't hit anymore. He's like Chris Davis. He has 7 strikeouts in a row. You know, he struck out 42% of the time that he's come to the plate. Gary Sanchez was on a catcher's career arc to go to the Hall of Fame. He's broken. Was it worth it so that he could frame low pitches? Also, you bring in a complete neophyte. I don't know if he's a great pitching coach or not. A complete neophyte as a pitching coach in Matt Blake. Seems like a great guy, well-respected in baseball. He had never done. He had never, ever made a trip to the mound before in his career. And now you're going to tell me that he's going to tell Garrett Cole and Jay Happ how to pitch? So you had a grizzled veteran in Larry Rothschild, and now you bring in a guy who's all about analytics and brilliant. But how's the pitching doing so far? I don't want to put the blame on him, but they're so locked into doing everything that the computer spits out. Again, I'll put myself in Hal Steinbrenner's shoes. Okay, we've been doing analytics every day, 24 hours a day, for however many years. We haven't won a title since 2009, and I've spent over $2 billion in salary.
But these are human beings, and they need to be treated like human beings. All right, enough with the numbers. The way you're talking, Michael, and it sounds to me that everything is about just being a slave to the numbers, that everything is going to fall into place because this is how baseball is right now. But sometimes you've got to motivate teams. Sometimes it does take a speech. Sometimes it does take Aaron Boone talking about his players being savages and getting thrown out of a game to kind of fire the team up. Or maybe it's got to be Brett Gardner hammering the top of the dugout with his bat. I mean, these are human beings. There's blood pumping through their veins here. It's not just all about numbers and resting on the right day and doing this and that because that's what the analytics tell you to do. It's still human beings going out there and playing. And you got to go to the mound. Why do you go to the mound? Sometimes you go to the mound, Michael, for instruction, and sometimes it's just to get in a pitcher's face. We need this guy. Go get him. I remember growing up as a Met fan. You know how many times like Keith Hernandez would go? What does Keith Hernandez know about talking to pitchers? And he'd go and he'd just scream into Doc Gooden's face and then go back to first base. And then Doc would strike the next guy out on 3 pitches because that fired him up. You know, what's so wrong, Michael? The analytics tell you that there's no clutch. The analytics tell you that there's no moments. You don't think that this team just needs a boot in the derriere, go out there and just be mad. And play mad and play angry, and maybe that'll actually get him over the hump. It sounds like there's just a bunch of robots out there with buttons being pushed. There's no emotion. Go out there and play like your hair's on fire. How about that?
There's something that Brian Cashman said on our air a couple of years ago, and it has resonated with me for a long time. We don't want to win one championship. We want to win several. And I thought at the time that was a brilliant thing to say. But now I say you got to win one before you win several. So at the trade deadline, they didn't bring in anybody. So what they're counting on, they almost feel like they have an automatic bid into the playoffs. And this is, I'll give you the bright side because it's not all negative. If they get into the playoffs and they get back Stanton and Judge, they're the best 8th seed that has ever been in the playoffs. And the Rays don't want to play them. Because if they're lined up with Cole and Tanaka to pitch the first 2 games, the Rays could be out. After having the best record in the American League in 2 games, they could. So the Yankees know they just have to get in. But my point is, stop resting people because it's the day they're supposed to rest. Because the urgent button must be pushed. We don't know when Stanton's coming back. We don't know when Judge is coming back, if they'll come back in time to be good enough to perform in the playoffs. It'd be a great thing if they did. But can you imagine the embarrassment if the New York Yankees, with everything that they have at their disposal, that has been given to them by ownership and management, that they don't make the playoffs in a season where 8 of the 15 teams make the playoffs, it would be incomprehensible. To me, it's incomprehensible, even with all their injuries, that they're 21-20 after 41 games. I can't believe it's happening. I just can't. They're better than that. Even with the injuries, they're better than that. And the next man up, not working this year, because those next men up have been exposed. They're not as good as the guys that went down. Mike Tauchman can't get a hit. Mike Ford has been struggling. And take a look, everybody. what meatball pitches. They call them middle. The Yankees aren't hitting fastballs, specifically Gary Sanchez. Right down the middle. They're fouling them back and not getting hits. Same thing with Talkman. Well, there's one thing that you have to know, whether you're an analytics person or not. If you can't hit a fastball, you can't play in the big leagues.
Nope.
Everything else comes and goes. It's hard to hit a curveball. Everybody who gets up at this level has to be able to hit a fastball down the middle. I haven't seen it. Gary Sanchez still has not gotten a hit off a middle fastball all year. Is that incomprehensible to you? It is to me.
It is. So when you if you have a season like this, again, we're far from this actually happening. Although every time we talk about it, it seems to get worse. So I guess it's on the table that they might miss the playoffs. Do you think they'll just say, okay, we'll just try again next year?
I don't know.
Will somebody pay for this?
I don't know. And I don't know how you go into next year where your key guys keep getting hurt. You can't if you're going to build a team around Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton, you damn well better make sure that they're on the field for 150 right. games a year. If they're not, then what's the point?
Hey, and Michael, you're right. If they get Stanton and Judge back, they're probably one of the great eight seeds of all time in any sport.
And they can win the World Series.
But it's not like they've won with those guys. And I'm not killing them, but we're still talking about a team that was still looked upon the last couple of years as a disappointment. After 2017, coming within an out of going to the World Series, people have looked at 18 and 19 as a disappointment. Yeah, they're great in the regular season, but what are you going to do in the postseason? So that's still hanging over this team's head. Even when they get back healthy, Michael, it's not automatic this team's winning a championship because they haven't since 2009. And that's with a healthy Judge and a healthy Stanton and perfectly 100% ready to go, still losing to the Astros. Yeah, maybe it was under circumstances because of the cheating aspect, but the fact still remains, Michael, that even in the playoffs and fully healthy, there were questions on whether this team could actually get it done. And now they might not even get the opportunity to do it.
Well, that's the Yankee Pinstripe Report brought to you by Budweiser Major League Beer. It's Don and I talked about it before the show. I mean, this is the story. The New York Yankees playing this way is the story. They're a better team than this, even with the injuries. And again, in summation, you can't stick to a plan when there's a level of urgency that they haven't felt in years. Can you imagine this team not making the playoffs? You can't be resting your best players because that's the day the computer spat out that you have to rest DJ LeMahieu. It's ridiculous. And just talking to old-time baseball people, they're sickened by the way the sport is now. Cal Ripken Jr.'s record is the safest record in all of sports. Nobody will ever play in that many games. It won't be allowed.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Talking Yankees and their shocking loss last night, 12-7 to the Blue Jays in Buffalo. And they're 5-14 in the last 19 games. 5-14. Let's go to Frank in Tom's River. Frank, why don't you start it off?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How you guys doing? I hope you had a wonderful Labor Day weekend.
All good. Same to you.
Thanks, man.
I have 3 points on Mike. Michael, you brought up the first point regarding Rothschild and Blake. I think it was a big mistake by the Yankees giving up on Rothschild and going with a young guy who had no experience in pitching in the major leagues, my opinion. Secondly, listen, watching that sixth inning last night, watching how the pitchers and the catchers, they weren't even in sync. I've never seen anything like that. Even Cohn brought it up. I mean, who's supposed to be in charge, the catcher or the pitcher? I mean, if you're throwing down a fastball or a curveball, throw the pitch. But that was, like, ridiculous. And my third point that I get disgusted seeing is when they do the injury update and you see Stanton skipping in the outfield. All he has to do is hit the ball. Let him get behind the plate and let him skip to first base. Let him do something.
See, but Frank, that's unfair because if he came back and a player's inclination is to run hard when there's something ahead of them, he's going to blow his leg out. So whether you think that it's taken too long, they're doing the right thing with him. Look, Judge said he shouldn't have been on the IL. I shouldn't even have been on. I would have been done in 3 days. Well, after 10 days, he plays, and he got hurt in 6 innings. So the Yankees aren't going to make that same mistake. They're going to have to be careful. You can't rush these guys back. Now, in terms of not being on the same page, David, I thought, broke it down great. But then on the postgame, Aaron Boone said, well, it was hard seeing the signs. But then Adam Ottavino said, no, it wasn't. It seems like everybody's at cross purposes. They couldn't get Green and Higashioka could not get on the same page. It's really strange. I mean, that's the sort of thing. This is how we're going to pitch to this guy in this situation. Everything is planned out. So what was the big hullabaloo? And they didn't choose the right pitch. Let's go to Paul in California. Paul.
Hi, Michael. First-time caller.
Welcome aboard.
I couldn't agree with you guys more. I felt months ago that, even years ago, that Gary, I mean, every time there's a foul ball behind the plate, he throws his arms out, and where's, you know, he's going, where is it? Where is it? I mean, they need a Thurman Munson on this team. That's what they need, to kick some butt and get going.
Well, I mean, Thurman Munson is a once-in-a-generation player, but they've been pretty lucky. They had a Jorge Posada who did a good job for them, and a Joe Girardi as well. And Gary Sanchez's offensive numbers, people don't want to hear it because right now he's not the flavor of the month for Yankee fans. They're historic. They're historic. His power numbers are historic. But he's broken right now. I mean, for them to bench him in two games, and that's what it is, he's been benched. Two games that they had to win, that tells you he's an automatic out right now. If you take the grand slam away that he hit against the Mets, Don, I mean, it's historically bad.
I know. Well, just what if you took that game away from the Yankees? Right? We thought it was all, you know, I remember when it happened, when that comeback happened. You're like, maybe we'll look back at that day and see it all turn around. It never did. They won the next day, and then nothing's really been great for them since. So it didn't really spur them on. But, Michael, I never believed that a pitcher could be a true leader on a team because they only pitch every once in a while. But I think CC Sabathia was a major piece of leadership in that room that's no longer there. Who's the leader? Who's the guy that can take the bull by the horns? Who's the guy that can give a Newt Rockne speech? Who's the guy that they can look to kind of fire them up? The caller mentioned Munson. Yeah, the Munson is a once-in-a-lifetime skill player, but from a leadership standpoint, that shouldn't be that difficult to find. Who is the Jorge Posada? Who is the Derek Jeter?
Well, I think the closest thing would be Gardner, and it's hard for him to do it. He's hitting 150.
He's not an everyday player. I mean,
but he's playing every day.
Right, but like you said, he's batting a .150. He seems like he's towards the end of his career. They need some leadership in there. They need somebody to get them going.
Let's go to Ronnie in the Cigar Lounge. Ronnie.
Hello, Mike, Don. You know, the Yankees are failing right now at four major levels. Offense, defense, starting pitching, and bullpen. The guys at the lounge want to know which one of those is the most shocking to you. And one more question we got, if you can answer, too. Do you guys put any stock in the statement, the comment, and I'm hearing it around, that Aaron Boone has lost the clubhouse?
No.
Let us have it, Mike.
No. No, I'll answer them in order. I believe that the thing that I'm most surprised at is the inefficiency of the bullpen. I mean, you look over the stretch when they're 5-14. The bullpen has blown, I think, five double-digit leads. That's the strength of this team. And I think that people underestimated the loss of Tommy Kahnle because it broke the whole chain. And they're still trying to get out from under it, but they have not done their job. That's the most surprising. Aaron Boone has not lost his team. It's such a knee-jerk reaction when a team's not playing well. The manager lost the team. They're playing terribly. Let's say he lost the team. Was that a reason for Chad Green to walk three batters yesterday? Was that a reason for Ottavino to give up a grand slam? People have to do their jobs. He's putting them in the position to do their jobs, and they're not doing it. Why is the manager always blamed, especially in this day and age, when the manager, it's in a collaborative effort with the entire organization?
And I think that's the saving grace for Boone, right? Because I think we can agree, Michael, that as great as Joe Torre was, I'm not sure he was the greatest tactician in the history of baseball. But he just knew what buttons to push. He knew how to handle all those egos, and that's one of the reasons why they won four championships in 5 years. So, all right, we explain away the X's and O's factor. But is there something else that Boone can do? I'm not going to suggest that he's lost the team, but if there is a lack of leadership, is there something that he can do? Is there something that he can say? It's not just about the lineup and making decisions in the game. It's being the leader of a team. Is it really gone that away, Michael, that it's all so robotic and analytic that there's no such thing as an inspirational speech? There's no such thing as getting in a player's face? There's no such thing as calling somebody into their office and say, listen, we need you to be better. We need you to step up here. Is that all gone now from baseball? Does that no longer exist?
You know what? Unfortunately, this year we're not in the clubhouse. We can't take the pulse of the team. We're not anywhere near the players. We're not allowed. So I can't answer that, but yeah. I will tell you, he's handed over leads to the bullpen. That's the formula for this team, and the bullpen has blown it. Now,
but you
we don't know
that.
What he's doing behind the scenes.
I know, but you know, the bullpen is the major problem. But as you said, they're not playing well defensively, right? They're not hitting. So there's a lot of things, Michael, that you could try to do, right?
Yeah.
I mean, again, I'm not suggesting he's doing a bad job, and I'm not suggesting that he should be fired, and I'm not suggesting that he's in over his head or anything like that, Michael, but he was given the keys to a Lamborghini, and now he's got a Volkswagen. Is he the right manager in this type of situation? Because I don't think the Yankees ever thought that they'd be in these shoes where they would actually be a very average baseball team.
Well, I will tell you this. If they got rid of Aaron Boone, it would be so disingenuous of this organization. He is in lockstep with everything the organization preaches. Everything. All of the analytics. Everything. Well, so if you got rid of him, are you going to get rid of yourself? You can't do it.
But he has been
the good soldier. He's done exactly what he's supposed to do, exactly what he said in the interviews, that he believed in the numbers, and he goes by the numbers. These are the numbers
right. That
are being spit out by their Mac Pro. That's it.
But other than going rogue, you just described someone that they could never get fired.
So
what would be the circumstances in which... Aaron Boone's going to have this job until he doesn't want to have it anymore?
But if you're going to be true to the numbers, and he is true to the numbers, and then it doesn't work out, it's the numbers' fault.
Right, but it's never the numbers' fault. That's why I always feel uncomfortable about managers in baseball, Michael. They don't matter until all of a sudden you need a scapegoat.
Well, because I think it would be unfair. If they made this guy the scapegoat, it would be unfair.
But you can't rule it out as a possibility. All of the teams are run analytically at this point, but you still see managers get fired.
Well, I'll tell you what. Dave Roberts was not fired by the Dodgers, and the moves he made in each of the World Series they lost were so curious, and if it was his moves, he deserved to be fired. But the Dodgers knew it wasn't his move.
Right,
it was moves off numbers and spreadsheets.
Right, but you're still talking about a baseball team that goes to the World Series or close every single year. If the Dodgers out of nowhere next year are around 500 and a chance of missing the playoffs, he might get fired. The numbers are always right, Michael. We talked about this last week. The way the numbers are set up is this is exactly how it's supposed to go. But there's always a margin for error. There's always a time it doesn't work. So they've got the excuse. This is supposed to work 75% of the time. Unfortunately, this was one of the 25% of the time it didn't work. Their ass is covered. But the manager is the one that can end up being the scapegoat when you have a bunch of losing seasons. Everybody's doing it analytically, but not everybody wins.
I will tell you this, though. I think it would be very tough for Brian Cashman to look Aaron Boone in the eye and fire him. Very tough. I don't know how he could look him in the eye. Aaron Boone is the guy they hired to do this job and follow the numbers. Okay. And for the most part, he does that. I don't know if he deviates. I have no idea. But Aaron Boone coming from a baseball family, there is no way that in Aaron Boone's soul that he would have rested DJ LeMahieu on his own on Saturday. No way. No way he would have rested Gleyber Torres, because you know what? You come back from the aisle, you play one day, and then you have to rest the next. Well, then he shouldn't have come back until he was ready to play every day. These are organizational decisions. So you have to get you've got to be mad at everybody. Don't put everything on number 17. It's not fair. And I'm not protecting him, because there have been some curious moves. But are those curious moves dictated? No. I'm not sure. I don't know. Don and I have talked about this over and over the years. We don't know who to blame anymore, the way baseball is. If a move went awry with Billy Martin, you knew it was Billy Martin. It was not Gabe Paul.
So let me ask you this, Michael. Is Cashman safe?
I think he is.
I think
Steinbrenner believes in him.
But it's hard for me to believe that both of these guys are going to be on scholarship forever. I mean, if Hal looks at this and is just absolutely disgusted by the fact that this team hasn't won in a decade, that everything collapsed, and it's and he's sick of the analytics and it's being driven, could Brian Cashman be in trouble?
I doubt it. I think, I mean, he's been here so long, I doubt it.
I just find it difficult to believe that there, how many times can you fire the hitting coach and the pitching coach and the trainers? I mean,
if I was Hal and I was dissatisfied. Now, Brian has been a great employee for this team for the longest time since he was a kid, literally a kid. I would say, listen, well, but Hal is an analytic guy too. Hal's into the numbers, but maybe you could deviate just a little bit in times of stress and trouble. The numbers cannot jump off the page and win a game tonight at Salem Field.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
There was such euphoria over the Islanders winning their series, probably going a little bit longer than Barry Trotz and Lou Lamoriello want it, and the players as well, but, you know, you do what you have to do to advance to the next round. They had to go seven games. And I hope, Donald, that that's the reason they lost 8-2 yesterday, is because they were exhausted and they'll regroup and be better in game two.
Right.
But you have been telling me for most of the restart of the hockey season that Tampa Bay is no joke.
No.
So do you believe it was their exhaustion, or do you believe that Tampa Bay is just that much better than the Islanders?
Well, I think the Lightning are that much better, but 8-2, I think, is because of the circumstances with the travel and how everything worked out with that first series. And, hey, the Islanders don't have a kick coming. They had the Flyers at 3-1, could have finished them off with an overtime victory and been on the same deal with Tampa, same rest, same travel. Tampa was able to leave on Saturday. The Islanders waited until Sunday to travel. So their day off was spent in the air going to Edmonton. And I figure Toronto to Edmonton's probably about four and a half hours. They did get a couple of hours back because of the time difference. But still, you know, Tampa's able to relax, prepare for Philly, prepare for the Islanders. Oh, it's the Islanders. Okay, get a practice in, fly out to Edmonton, relax for an extra day. That probably led to the 8-2 final score where the Islanders, once Nelson missed on that shorthanded breakaway that would have given them a 2-1 lead, it just like the air popped out of the balloon, and then it was Tampa the rest of the way. All right, that explains losing by 6 goals. But this is a completely different beast, and that's no offense to Philadelphia or Washington or Florida, the teams that they faced. I think Tampa's the best team by far. I think they're winning the Cup. And one of the things you saw in last night's game is they get production like no other team on the blue line. They have just so many good defensemen. Hedman's great. McDonough's great. Shattenkirk had 3 points, all right? So it's bad enough that they've got guys like Kucherov and Johnson and Point. But they can score on the blue line. They've got a world-class goaltender. Michael, this is going to be tough. It's just going to be tough. Now, Columbus did it last year by sweeping them, but I think that works against the Islanders, right, Michael? Because they're not going to try to let that happen again. You know, so they've been motivated since the slow start in the beginning of the season to win this cup. John Cooper's, I think, job's on the line if they don't win a cup because they've been banging on the door and haven't been able to finish. So there's a lot working against the Islanders, but 8-2, I think, was a byproduct of the travel and all that, but they've got their hands full. And I think we'll be at a better indication of how close they are in tomorrow's game. But they're going to have to play perfect hockey. Boychuk's
so who's
coming
in
back
the net?
From injury. That's another question, because he was right to go with Greiss. I thought they'd go with Greiss in Game 7. He was hardly tested in that game because the Flyers didn't get really any shots. But you almost had to go with Greiss in Game 1 because he won you a Game 7. But both goaltenders were awful. But I think at the end of the day, Varlamov has played in 15 postseason games going into last night. I think he deserves to get it back. He's been a good goaltender for them this year. It was just unusual circumstances. Question is, if you bring Boychuk back in, who do you take out? Do you take Taves out? That might be where they go, because there's a lot of defensemen that played poorly last night. But Barry will have him ready. I don't think they're going to get blown out again, but I had the Lightning winning in five, so I really think Tampa's that much better. But not 8-2 better. But we'll get a better indication tomorrow.
What makes them better than the Islanders? What do they have that the Islanders don't match up with?
They're just so deep offensively. Like I said, they get production from their blue line because there's so many teams that might have one guy that can score on the blue line. You look at the Rangers, right? They were so much better this year. Why? Because they got production out of D'Angelo and Fox on the blue line. Shattenkirk may not be a great defender, but he can get you points. And Hedman is a terrific player, one of the best defensemen in the league. He was out against Columbus last year. Many people believe that was the reason why they lost to Columbus was because of him. So that's the difference. The Islanders have a really good, solid team up and down in a system, and they've got skill guys like Beauvillier and Barzal. This Tampa team stacked. I mean, they just have they've been really good for years. Remember, this is a team that 5 years ago went to the Stanley Cup final. They've gone to the conference final four of the last 6 years. They're the best team in the NHL. They are, and we'll see if the Islanders can just find some sort of a weakness like Columbus did last year. But it's going to be tough.
Is there any way that the Lightning could get better and Stamkos could return sometime during the series, or that be more likely next series?
From what I understand, he's been ruled out of this series.
Okay.
From Cooper. So, yeah, that's all the Islanders need. You can make a case. I think Kucherov's probably better at this stage of his career, but still, you're talking about a tremendous player in Stamkos. But I think they might be able to get him back for the Stanley Cup final. I think Vegas has maybe the best chance at Tampa, but they're down one game to none. They'll play game two tonight in Edmonton, but it's a tall order. It really is. But, hey, I mentioned it in the soft open. The last time the Islanders gave up 8 goals in a playoff game was game 2 of the Stanley Cup final in 1980, and that's when they won their first Stanley Cup. So, hey, Eddie O said it best during the game. You lose 1-0, you lose 8-2, it's still just one loss. You're still down 1-0 in the series.
And I don't know if I buy that, though, because there's a different mindset getting blown out.
True, but you know, I thought about that, Michael. I just wonder sometimes when you – let's say you lose the game in overtime and it just irks you and it drives you crazy. 8-2, maybe you just forget about it. They could have the built-in excuse, I guess, if they want because of the circumstances with them having to go 7 games. But at the end of the day, you gotta win game 2 because in normal situations, they'd be going back to the barn for game 3 and you wouldn't be overly concerned being down 2-0. But with really nothing changing other than the last line change in the color of your uniform – you know, there's probably not a lot that's momentum-wise that's going to stifle Tampa if they win game 2. So they're going to have to make this a best-of-5 series and play better. And that's the other thing, is they can play better, much better than they did last night. So let's see if it's enough to even the series.
Gut feeling. Mets make the playoffs or not?
My gut tells me no. I just don't think they have the pitching. But then again, I watch the Giants a lot, Michael. The Giants are the first wild card. Can you believe like the not finished in second place? Like, so, how do you explain that? They're in full rebuild. You know, they've got Brandon Belt and Brandon Crawford. That's probably the only two people anybody in Pablo Sandoval who hardly plays. The only guys left from those championships. Look at the Marlins. Can anybody name a Marlin other than Marte, who they traded for? So it doesn't seem like you have to be great. But, Michael, where's the pitching coming from? They got to rob Peter to pay Paul just to get the starting pitching, to get the relief pitching.
Yeah, but you know what? If they made the playoffs, they'd be tough in the first round because you have DeGrom and Lugo. Lugo's been stretched out now. Lugo's a good pitcher. Now, I was a little disappointed that Peterson laid an egg yesterday, first time he really has pitched poorly. But they've got some resiliency and they came back, but their bullpen's going to be questionable. I don't know if they have enough bullpen to keep teams from scoring when they have a lead.
Listen, the format tells you that they're still alive in this one, but they just can't seem to gain any traction. I mean, I still think when you look at the standings, Michael, that I still think there's a very good chance you're going to have to finish above 500 to make it. Right now the Marlins are 500 and the Giants are 500. So they've got to play better to just get to where those teams are. And can they play consistent enough to do that? Time's starting to run out. They only have 18 games left.
Yeah.
So... And they're producing some offense, right?
Yeah, and yesterday's game was so big to gain ground on the Phils.
Yeah, and they just didn't do it. I think the Phillies are better, the Braves are better. So now you got to just battle. Now you're battling the likes of San Francisco and Miami.
And you're a better team than both of them.
But you don't play the Giants, and I think they're done with the Marlins, right? They have to be because you only play 10 games. They had to have played the Marlins. Do they have any games left with them? God, it felt like all they did was play the Marlins.
Now
they might be done with them. I'd have to look.
Another big story from today, and we're going to talk to Joe Douglas in a couple of minutes at 4:30. He's upset at the way the Jets are not being respected by those that are prognosticating. And I'm going to ask him this straight out. Well, okay, tell me why we should think they're going to be better. I mean, maybe that's a great rallying cry.
That's all
right. I, for one, Don, I'm not hanging my hat on 6-2 to finish the season at all. Now, I give Gase credit for not letting the team quit. That's cool. The schedule for the final eight games of the year is a joke. 6-2 means nothing to me. The season was over at 1-7, so why should I celebrate 6-2? They played with no pressure. So what are we supposed to think about this Jet team going into this year? What?
Listen, I'm not gonna back down. I want to see it. But I understand his perspective of just whatever he can to try to motivate the team, right? Be insulted by nobody giving you a chance and all that. That's just motivational garbage. Because it's so interesting to me how convenient organizations are with whether the media means anything or not. Most of the time, we don't pay any attention to that. And all of a sudden, they pay attention to it. We know they pay attention to it, and they use it for their own service, right? They think Joe probably thinks it's good to kind of motivate the team. Nobody believes in us. Nobody's picking us. Everybody thinks we're the worst team in the league. That's all that is. But what else are you supposed to do? You've got a coach that still has a lot of answers. You lost your best wide receiver. You lost your two best defensive players. You were still an under 500 team last year, and you're 6-2. Came against some bad teams. So do I think that they can be, you know, a 500 team? Sure, but, you know, anybody to pick the Jets would just have to be some kind of a crazy fan. What is it about them? Honestly, Michael, what is it about them that fires you up?
I don't think Ira would pick the Jets. If Ira called in, he would not pick the Jets.
But I'm just saying, but there are some fans that just love and adore their team, and they're going to always be great, all right? The best you could do is you could have to say that there's question marks about the head coach. I'm sorry. Even the Gase family probably wonders how good a coach he is. He's coached 4 years in the league, made the playoffs once. Right? So there's questions about how good a coach he is. All right? You lost two defensive players. I still think the defense could be good because they're well coached. But how great can it honestly be? I think their weapons are solid, but there's nobody that jumps off of the page to you. And Sam Darnold, I think, is their best player and I think can still have a great year. But you're limited to wins and losses, Michael, based on the weapons that you have. Like, so who is their best offensive weapon? Is it Perryman? Is it Mills, who's been hurt in his training camp? Is it Bell? I mean, who is it that you look at and say, this is the reason this team is going to be outstanding? There isn't anybody.
There isn't. Doesn't mean there's nothing to hang your hat on. That's why I'm surprised that Joe's a good guy. Again, he's trying to rally his team, but based on what?
Well,
Are they better than the Bills? Are they better than the Patriots? No. Even the decimated Patriots? I don't know.
I think he's probably going to take exception to the fact, and I understand this, that when you look at them like ranked 27th in the league, I don't think they're one of the worst teams in the league. But it's all just motivation, isn't it?
Yeah, but he's putting himself out there.
Of course he is, but that's kind of what the job is, right? Putting yourself out there. Look at the Giants. They kind of done the same thing. Like Mara didn't say what the record has to be, but he said you got to play meaningful games in December. Michael. Well, what leads you to believe that that's even a possibility? Right. So am I supposed to take that as a shot at Gettleman when he says I want this team to be playing meaningful games in December? Do you think that's even possible?
I don't know
what to. 4-12 last year.
Football starts on Thursday, Don. I don't have a feel for it at all. I don't know what. We haven't seen any team play any exhibition or preseason. I don't know. I don't know what's what. So it's hard to pick. I get it, but I mean, all we could do is go by past performance and who they have on the field. I'm not seeing it with either New York team.
But did either team make an acquisition where you say this is the reason they're going to be better than they were last year? The Jets were a better overall team than the Giants were, but they lost more than they gained.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mosley opts out. They trade Adams away. So, yeah, they could be better if guys play better, but just all we have to deal with not seeing any preseason games and just going based off of practice, that they might be better. From the Giants, Michael, what's the acquisition? They got a rookie at left tackle. Did they acquire? Is Martinez going to make the defense that much better? Who did they pick up where you say, well, that's got to be two wins right there? So, and you're talking about trying to improve from 4-12, the Giants. So, yeah, I'm with you. I just, all we can go is by past performance, and past performance doesn't tell you a lot, especially since the Jets' best part of the season was in the second half when they really didn't play anybody.
Now, we open up the show dissecting what's happening with the Yankees. 5-14 in their last 19 games. They lost 4 in a row. A big game yesterday, 12-7 to Toronto in Buffalo. And here's today's Yankees starting lineup, brought to you by Nissan and Bigelow Tea. You've got DJ LeMahieu at third, Luke Voit at first, Aaron Hicks in center. Cleaning up is a right fielder, Clint Frazier. Gleyber Torres at short, Mike Tauchman in left. Gary Sanchez, after being benched the last 2 days, is back behind the plate. He'll bat seventh. Batting eighth, the DH, Miguel Andujar, starting to swing the bat well. And batting ninth and playing second base, it's Tyler Wade. On the mound for the Yankees will be the veteran Jay Happ. Taijuan Walker will be on the mound for the Toronto Blue Jays. He's pitched very well since they acquired him from Seattle. That's today's Yankees starting lineup, brought to you by Nissan. Nissan's an easier choice than ever with their exciting and fuel-efficient lineup. Now, get great offers across their full line. Shop your local Nissan store at NissanUSA.com. And Bigelow Tea. Bigelow Tea is a proud supporter of the Michael K. Show and the official hot tea of Joe Torre and the New York Yankees. Let's try to squeeze a call in before we break, because we want to get to Joe Douglas on time. Let's go to Patrick. He's in upstate New York. What's up, Patrick?
Hey, Michael. Hey, Don. Thanks for having me on. I just wanted to come to the defense of Aaron Boone here as a younger guy who understands, you know, the analytics and everything. Everything's put under a microscope this year because, you know, the season's only 60 games. So if they have a 40 stretch of 40 bad games, that's 2/3 of the season. And if we're playing a regular season, that's only a quarter of the season. So it's really put under a microscope.
It has to be.
And
every team's on the same rules of engagement.
In the same boat.
Not just the Yankees, every team. They knew they had to play well for 60 games and make the playoffs. 8 teams are making the playoffs out of 15. It's incomprehensible with everybody injured that they wouldn't be good enough to be one of the 8 teams standing. Incomprehensible. I'm not saying it's Aaron Boone's fault either, Patrick. Not at all. But you can't defend the Yankees because everything's put under a microscope. Okay, we were playing games when we started, the season started. Well, every game is 2.7. Well, then look at what they've done. Look at what they've done. So 14 losses, 2.7, you do the math, and then doing the math of 5 wins, they've been horrendous. This is a stretch that is inexplicable. It's inexplicable. How can anybody defend it? Let's go to Vinny in Poughkeepsie. Vinny.
Yeah, Michael, the Yankee fans have gone on about 2 or 3 weeks now about the Yankees not doing good. And you keep on saying, we're going to make the playoffs. Don't worry about it. We're going to make the playoffs. Well, we aren't going to make the playoffs now the way they're playing.
You're right. I didn't think, Vinny, there was any way they would make the playoffs. And I still think they'll make the playoffs. The fact that it's this close is it's insulting to the talent that they have. So, listen, every day we give opinions. And Don and I both went on the record, Vinny, and said, they're just playing to get in. And I think that they've operated under that premise as well. Now, they look up. They might not get in. They have 9 games against a spunky, spirited Blue Jay team. They have 3 games at the end of the season against a Marlins team that might decide whether or not they make the playoffs, which would be one of the great upsets if they do. They have 3 games against the Red Sox, and then the other games are against the Orioles, who are chasing them. It is not a slam dunk, Don, that they're making the playoffs. I think they will, but it's a lot closer than it should be.
Well, because normally, Michael, we would look and say, oh, they've got Baltimore, they've got Detroit, they've got like teams that they don't even have to try and sweep the series. But the worst team that they have left are the Red Sox. You know Boston would still be motivated to knock the Yankees out. Like, so the schedule, and we said at the beginning, the schedule's going to be different. We thought it would work to the Yankees' advantage because of the games they had with the Marlins and because of the games that they had with the Orioles. Didn't turn out to be that way, did it?
Nope. We thought this was going to be the easy portion of the schedule. It's not, because the Blue Jays are good. And the Blue Jays went out and got Taijuan Walker. They made trades for Jonathan Villar because they want to go for it. They haven't made the playoffs in forever.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Michael K. Show.
Joe Douglas, general manager of the New York Jets. What do you think is possible for your team this year? What can they do?
I think there's a lot of guys that have a lot of pride, have worked very hard to get to this point, just want to go out and prove themselves.
You're insulted by the way people are prognosticating the Jets. And tell me why they should think any differently. I mean, what have the Jets shown us going into the season? Who should they be picked over?
Look, I understand that question. The bottom line is the time for talk's over. We feel like we've gone out, we've worked hard. They understand why people say that. Now it's time for action.
This is the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Hi, right, welcome back to the show, everybody. And the K Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Later on in the show, at 6:30, we're going to have on Keyshawn Johnson, who is one-third of our morning show, which is a really, really fun show. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. You can hear it from 6 to 9 every day, Monday through Friday. And I've decided I'm going to stir it up with him a little bit, Don.
Okay.
Because, we send out a promo on Twitter of what's coming on. It says Michael K. and Don LaGreca today. And he writes, what, Rosenberg's not doing the show? And I tweeted back, I said, well, once he found out you were a guest, he decided he didn't want any part of it because of your lack of respect. The only guy he respects on the show is you, Don.
And I don't know what it is, but I don't know either. Can't let me have it.
What do you mean let you have it? You can have it. You can have him all you want. He's yours.
Well, I don't know why I get upset about it. He just he likes me for whatever reason. I don't know what it is, but like I tweeted out, because 70s on 7 on Sirius XM had the top 700 songs of the 70s during the Labor Day holiday weekend, and Superstitious by Stevie Wonder was 230.
And you were offended by
that. 20 at least. So he got back and said, this is why Peter Rosenberg and Michael K., this is why I love Don LaGreca. And you took it as a shot.
I take everything as a shot. Yankees playing poorly, 5-14 in the last 19 games. They're two games behind Toronto for second place in the East. Brian Cashman was in Buffalo yesterday where the Yankees are playing the Blue Jays. Today, after the desultory loss yesterday, what an awful game. 12-7, 10 runs in the sixth inning against two of their top leverage relievers. Cashman decided to talk to the team today. So he told them that the Yankees, he told them he believes in them, reminded them that he drafted, acquired them for a reason. According to Lindsey Adler of The Athletic, he said, we're on our own. There's no help coming from anywhere. He pretty much, I guess, emphasized the urgency. And I don't know why they wouldn't know that. All they have to do is look at the standing where they actually have to be concerned about what the Orioles, the Mariners, and the Detroit Tigers are doing. When I say that, Don, I can't believe that I'm saying those words. I mean, don't you feel the same way? I mean, we both unequivocally said they're making the playoffs. Now there's a chance they're not making the playoffs.
I still believe they're going to make it.
So do I, but there's a chance they might not.
But there is a chance that they may be playing meaningful games the final week of the season, which means there's a possibility they may not have the luxury of starting a Cole and Tanaka in the playoffs right away because those guys maybe had to pitch late in the season to clinch a playoff spot. And then that really messes things up, doesn't it? So you don't want to have to be in that situation because I don't think there really is does it matter whether you finish 1 or 8? Doesn't matter. They're probably going to be playing in a bubble, I would think, or they're playing in front of no fans. So it really doesn't matter. But if they do play in their own building, they are 14-7 at home. So I guess that could hurt them that they would have to play.
Well, the first round, from what I hear, is going to be in the team with the higher seeds record. So they'd have to go to Tropicana Field.
Right.
Then after that, it goes into the bubble.
All right. And if that's, they may not even make it into the bubble, with that said. You know, so I just find it interesting. And you brought up in 2009, the last time they won a championship, Cashman had done this before. But to me, this seems kind of bad for Aaron. Right? I mean, he's the general manager's talking to the team. And that's not the way it's supposed to be. This is not Steve Phillips, as you said. This isn't Brody Van Wagenen, who's always in the clubhouse and always on the road and has a relationship with the team in that sense. This is a guy that doesn't normally do this. And, yeah, it worked in 2009, but we were kind of just talking about Boone. What I look at it, Michael, is that if the message isn't getting through with Boone, then Cashman has to say something. That looks bad for Aaron. Or the organization just looks at it and say, hey, we're running this thing. We're going to be the ones that are going to talk to the team. I don't know how to take it. But
well, I really believe that they are one. I mean, that's the structure of the Yankee organization. The GM and the front office and the manager, they act as one. It's just different than it used to be. Now, Pete Caldera covers the Yankees, said that Cashman painted this picture, quote, "The storm's upon us. We're out at sea, and the Coast Guard's not coming to save us. We've got to swim to shore." He reminded the club of who they are, what they're capable of, and he said, quote, "We have big goals, and those goals are still in play."
So that kind of shoots down the theory from a caller earlier that said maybe they just don't care because it's a 60-game season and it doesn't really matter. At least give me this, Michael. They want to win.
Oh, yeah.
They're not going to look at this as it's COVID-19, let's forget about it, there's going to be an asterisk next to the championship. So if this doesn't work, Michael, and they miss the playoffs, are you confident Boone survives then?
I do. I am. As I said earlier, I don't know how anybody from the front office that would get rid of Boone could look him in the face. I mean, they're just as complicit as him. This is everybody making decisions. It's different. The manager is not where the buck stops anymore. It's just not.
All right, let's have this conversation then. Then who will be to blame? Because the general manager, for the first time in 11 years, went down and talked to the team. And correct me if I'm wrong, Michael, there's been a few times between 2009 and now in which they completely missed the playoffs. So Cashman actually went down because he wants to win this thing. And he sees an opportunity to do it. And he's red hot, the team isn't performing. So if this continues and his speech didn't work and they missed the playoffs, is he just going to be fine with that and we'll reconvene in 2021, we'll make a couple of tweaks to the roster and we'll try again? Or is somebody going to be a sacrificial lamb for that?
Somebody could end up being a sacrificial lamb. I don't believe it's Aaron Boone. Aaron Boone has been the perfect soldier for them. He's a good face of the organization. He does things the right way. He always spins positive in front of a camera. And those are some of the rules of engagement that he got hired. What? Now, Jack Curry writes that Cashman acknowledged that speaking to the players is therapeutic for him because he believes in running to a problem to try and fix the problem. While Cashman said there's no guarantee the meeting will have any impact, it was something he felt the need to do. And I agree with you in a sense, Don. I mean, that's the manager's job, because what's left on the manager's plate that he can dine on, and that's the ability to motivate the team. Right. And the fact that Cashman felt he had to go to Buffalo to do it doesn't reflect that great on the entire coaching staff.
And again, I don't want to walk on eggshells. I know Aaron well, but I get paid to give my opinion here, right? And the thing that I would fear for Boone is this is not necessarily what he was asked to manage. He was asked to manage a machine that was built to win a championship. And he did a pretty decent job. He won 203 games in his first 2 years as the manager. Is this the guy, considering he's a neophyte and had never done it before, to work through what right now is a very average baseball team, even beyond the injuries?
Well,
is he equipped to do this? Because this is going to take, even in an analytic world, Michael, a lot of heavy lifting to navigate through right now, which is a team that's a game above 500 and playing worse than that.
Now, Cashman ultimately said, according to Eric Boll on the news, they will see when asked about the impact he hopes his team, talk to the team might have. In the end, he said, talk is cheap. I will tell you this. If Brian Cashman went to Hal Steinbrenner and said, I think we should change the manager, that would make Brian Cashman look bad. Because he took a chance on a neophyte manager, and the first 2 years, I think it's worked out great, 203 wins. But then you're admitting that you made a mistake. You're the one who decided to get rid of Joe Girardi. So I think that Brian and Aaron are kind of tied together. I think that Sean Marks with the Nets is putting himself in the same boat, hiring a neophyte like Steve Nash. And I think that Brody Van Wagenen put himself in that boat, hiring Luis Rojas, guys with no experience.
And I don't know Hal Steinbrenner any more than most people. I've interviewed him a couple of times, met him a few times. Is he in love with the analytics because he just happens to be an analytic guy? Or is he in love with it because Brian convinced him that this is the best way to win? And for the most part, it's worked. The team has won 100 games a year. Like, if it's the latter, Michael, then he might look at it and say, Brian, you convinced me of this analytics stuff, and I'm not seeing any championships here. Are you sure this is the way to run the team? And can Hal lose confidence in Brian if he's so married to the analytics and it's just not working?
I think I'm not saying that Hal is a guy who's a slave to the analytics of baseball, but he is discerning and analytical in all of the moves that he makes. Mm-hmm. He's not a knee-jerk sort of guy. He gets a lot of information thrown his way, and he makes decisions off that. So I don't think that Brian had to sell him on analytics.
No.
I think that he's in. He's in.
And listen, I would trust Brian, too, because there's been a tremendous amount of success. But not to sound like the fans who are like, what would happen if George was alive? You know, you've built a mission statement where it's supposed to be a championship every year, and there now hasn't been a championship for a decade. And now in a year where it was just a fait accompli that this team was going to go to the playoffs, and now we're having a conversation with 18 games left in the season that they may not make the playoffs. I find it very difficult to believe that an owner is just going to go, oh, well, that's just one of those things. They've been saying that's been one of those things for a few years now. 2017, hey, it was a bit of a surprise. They were a year ahead of schedule. But 2018, 2019, now 2020.
I will tell you this. Not any information that I've gotten from anybody. I would think that Hal Steinbrenner is red hot the way this team is playing. I would say the president of the team, Randy Levine, is red hot about the way this team is playing. You think that they like this? This is disgraceful that the teams that we say are chasing them are chasing them. They have a fraction of the payroll of the New York Yankees. I don't care who's hurt. The Yankees should not be fending off the Tigers, Seattle, and Baltimore. It's insulting. Seattle and Baltimore, Don, and the Tigers are in total teardowns.
Michael, they're not built for this. Now, it's not going to manifest itself during COVID-19 because there's nobody in the building, okay? But they're not built not to make the playoffs. All right, because what if they miss the playoffs? Then that could affect the ratings on YES next year. That can affect the attendance next year, which might already be affected because of COVID-19. You know, so are the Yankees really built to have a team that's not going anywhere and not competing for a championship?
Well, it's important to be good every single year,
right?
Because you own the network too. So winning drives ratings. Ratings drive revenue. If God willing, we're allowed to have fans in the stands next year, what you do this year does impact ticket sales for next year. So this is all things that Hal Steinbrenner is probably sitting in that office in Tampa. And he's steamed about because he has given the Yankees every single thing that they could possibly want to make this a success. And to sit back and see this train wreck has to be infuriating to him.
Now we'll see what happens with the conversation that Cashman had with the team.
And I will tell you this, Don. I've been told by coaches and managers in all sports, you have a meeting, you better win. You better win after that meeting, because then that meeting falls so flat if they come out and they lose tonight.
So now where do you go?
Awful. Where do you go then?
Yeah.
You've played your card. You've had the meeting, and they lose to the Blue Jays and Taijuan Walker today. Then you're caught with your pants down. What do you do next?
That was kind of a desperate move today. I mean, you think about it. I mean, that's what fans are feeling right now about this team. It sounds like they feel the same way. All right, this isn't lost on them. They sense it, they feel it, and there's nothing you can do. The trading deadline is done. You know, you're stuck.
And Cashman said he does not regret not making any deals. And I also wonder, with the amount of money that all the teams are losing, how much did Hal Steinbrenner want to pour into this train wreck? How much did he want Brian Cashman to add more payroll? I have no idea. I've not heard. But I wonder, what owner wanted to add more loss, because anybody you add it to a payroll right now just goes straight to loss. Because you can have any nefarious thoughts about how the books are cooked or whatever in all sports teams. Baseball teams, every one of the 30 is losing money this year. They can't make money. They can't make money without a fan in the stands. So they're losing money. And if you pick up a player that's going to cost you $10 million, that's $10 million more that you're losing. Who wants to do that?
But when you're built like the Yankees are, Michael, can you afford to not make the playoffs when you know that you're going to have a lot of problems next year? I mean, how much interest might there be? I mean, listen, it's the Yankees. They're the most popular team in New York, but that could affect. What would be happening right now if there were fans in the seats? Would there be less tickets being sold because the team's missing Aaron Judge and Stanton and they're losing games? And we don't know. I don't know if the ratings have been affected on yes. It's a convoluted year anyway.
No, the ratings have been okay. They've been steady.
But you go next year, what's going to be the anticipation about the team unless they make a major transaction, which they're likely not going to do? Then there could become a problem with trying to drive the network and making sure that people come into the ballpark. So there's an obligation they feel every year. They've built a beast, Michael. When everybody was building stadiums that hold 40,000 people, they went 55-plus because they felt every year we're going to compete for a championship, every year we're going to be relevant. You know, they're not built for this. And that's what's got to be panicky because that's kind of what you'll end up missing the playoffs this year. I just think would be not catastrophic, but darn close to it.
It would be colossally embarrassing. Again, if you lose out to any of the three teams I mentioned, and I'm not casting aspersions to those teams.
Those teams are
in rebuilds, teardowns and Michael, rebuilds.
Michael, we were having conversations with Buster Olney and Jeff Passan. They were talking about the teams the Yankees are concerned about as the ones that weren't going to do anything this year. Baltimore, Detroit. You look at what's happening with the Marlins and San Francisco. It's like those teams are going to be all. Those teams are competing. They're playing well. And so you can't just say that, well, eventually things will go back to normal. But there's less than 20 games left in the season.
Anything can
happen here.
I look at the way the Yankees are structured, and I look at the guy that is the controlling partner for them, and he is a patient dude, but he also is demanding. It's in the family DNA. He can't be happy about this. I have not spoken to him. I'm just assuming, knowing him as little as I know him, how could you be happy with this? All the resources that you've put into this and the trust that you have given to the extensive analytic group, which is extensive, and then you see a team like the Tampa Bay Rays who play in the backyard of where Hal Steinbrenner lives, and they're running away with the East with a microscopic payroll compared to the Yankees. How could Hal Steinbrenner not be red hot? I don't blame him. I don't blame him.
Right.
They've got to play better than this.
And you know him better than I do, but what happens when he's red hot, Michael? He's obviously not his father. He doesn't overreact.
He's not, but he'll sit back and analyze.
Right. And what would he analyze from this? Like who's well, listen, we're talking there's still so much. I think they're making it and they get healthy. We can a month from now, Michael, we can talk about a team that feels like the best team in baseball again. So we can't get over crazy about it, but tonight's important because if you don't respond to that Cashman meeting, where do you go?
Yeah, I mean, what's next? And you're not going to make any major changes or anybody's going to lose their job after tonight. There'll be 18 games left. As Cashman said, nobody's coming to save us. We've got to swim to shore ourselves. Do they have the ability to swim to shore themselves?
Now, can I read deeper into that?
Yeah.
Nobody's coming to save us. What does that mean for Stanton and Judge?
I don't know.
I mean, I would think if Judge and Stanton are coming back, that's somebody that can save us. I mean, am I reading too deep into it? Does he lack confidence that those guys are going to be ready for the playoffs?
Maybe they have to look at it as if they rejoin us, it's going to be a positive. But they can't bet on anything because that's a great point. If you get Cashman, if you get Stanton and Judge back, and you do get into the playoffs, then you're as good as any team in the playoffs, and they could go all the way to the World Series. And I don't think that's hyperbole. If you get back a ready Judge and a ready Stanton, and you add it to the lineup, and then you would assume that sooner or later the bullpen is going to return to what it is, then you don't think the Tampa Bay Rays don't want to play the Yankees in that first round because that would be a hotly contested, really, really viral series. They don't like each other. They've thrown at each other. That would be an unbelievable first-round series. And a series the Yankees could win in two games. And the Rays could win in two games. But if the Yankees get their players back, you want no part of them in the postseason.
But judging by what Cashman said, I would think that neither of those two players will be back before the playoffs.
I think they will. I don't know if they're going to be sharp, but I think they'll be back. We'll see. I could be wrong. Now,
well, they better hurry up, right? I mean, you know, the season's over 19 days from now.
Yeah, they're running out of time.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.